Hey everyone, it's time to kick off another exciting edition of our DevOps Office Hours. It's June 21st, 2023. My name's Eric Osterman and I'll be your host. I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. We help teams conquer AWS using our rock solid blueprints with Terraform. Whether you're starting from scratch or just not satisfied with your current setup, book a session with me directly by going to cloudposse.com/quiz. Answer a few quick questions, and we'll have a call to show you exactly what your future can look like. For those of you new to the call, the format's very informal. My goal is to get your questions answered. If you're curious about Cloud Posse or any of our open source tools and modules, this is a great place to ask. For those of us joining through the podcast or YouTube channel, you can join these sessions live by registering at cloudposse.com/officehours. Again, cloudposse.com/officehours. We host these calls every week. Our call today is recorded, and we'll be posting a recording of this session to our YouTube channel. So if you enjoy the content and want to support what we do over here, please hit those like and subscribe buttons. Just head over to youtube.com/cloudposse. Again, youtube.com/cloudposse. Also, if you find anything interesting today in the session, it's a great way to share it with your team afterwards. It's a full recording with the screen share and everything of what we talked about. So with that said, let's dive into the announcements. So here are some things that caught my attention this week that I'd share with everyone. First one is a simple little Ruby CLI to facilitate setting up the replication, the logical replication between two Postgres clusters. Helpful if you are working on a migration. Another tool was, another announcement was from AWS. I'm a little bit confused by this. I haven't gone too far into it. I see we have Vlad here, who is the AWS translator for us. How is this different than the ability of connecting directly to EC2 instances, for example, with SSM?
I didn't really dive into this, so I don't know how to answer that, but I know this one allows you to also connect to stuff that is not an EC2 instance. Like databases or whatever other IPs are in your VPC. Agents still reverse engineered the implementation in the AWS console and released a thing for it. Give me a second to find it, but this wasn't interesting to me, so I didn't dive deeper into it. Sorry.
I'll say why it was interesting to me, even though I don't think it still solves what we wanted to do. One of the challenges we have working with Terraform, managing resources inside of AWS, is that in a VPC. So we always have to deploy AWS client VPN as part of a separate phase of the rollout. And, whether that gets complicated pretty quickly. You have very large architecture, you don't want to have a whole bunch of client VPNs deployed for cost reasons. So we, connect over the transit gateway to get to the databases so we can provision users or manage the schemas in there. Similarly, if you are managing like EKS, which is sitting on private subnets, you need some way to connect to the Kubernetes endpoint for that. So I would love to see a way where one could have these kind of ephemeral, short-lived connections, opening up TCP ports on localhost like this does as part of the runtime of Terraform. Like imagine if you could do a Terraform apply and it creates a short-lived socket, TCP socket to the Postgres database or to the Kubernetes API endpoint. And then that connection could be terminated at the end. That way you can still do a full Terraform build of resources. Alternative to that is, we run Terraform in AWS, like on EC2s or something through Spacelift or Terraform Cloud, or forthcoming is actually our GitHub Actions now. So we can do the same. Again, just more infrastructure to do something relatively simple.
What you want might be doable with this thing, but I'm not sure. Again, it wasn't. Yeah.
No, I don't think it's doable out of the box, but this is kind of like one of the right stepping stones to get there. maybe. All right. So next announcement is something that I confess, I don't know why I didn't notice it. So AWS Controllers for Kubernetes has been around for a while. I just remember it as an AWS Labs project and in a single repo. Looks like they've spun it off into its own org, and it's a total treasure trove of really awesome little operators to do cool things natively in Kubernetes that would facilitate, for example, Helm chart deployments of your full application stack in Kubernetes. Most importantly, what's interesting about this is, you know, they have like an IAM controller, and also by breaking these out independently as separate controllers, I think that was really smart, because now the permissions of each controller can be restricted more easily. So has anybody been playing around with any of these controllers already?
I did, but very, very, very limited use cases, like just creating a couple of SQS queues and things like that.
Did you use the new model where they're all broken out into individual controllers?
Honestly, I've got no idea how that was deployed.
Understood. Cool. Well, something worth checking out. I think the IAM piece is really cool, especially because this way you can deploy services that are more self-contained. All right. Small announcement from GitHub. This was announced last September. It's been in a closed beta, I believe. Now this is generally available, so you can get larger runners managed by GitHub. Now, I don't believe these are free, even for open source projects. I think you have to pay. Here's something I stumbled across. I thought this is pretty cool. As we're building out our GitHub Actions for Atmos and Terraform, I thought, wouldn't it be cool if we could have an automatic graph? And we know there's the Terraform graphs, which are really ugly, and those are just static images. Well, what if we leverage the new Mermaid capabilities within Markdown instead? So I put me on a hunt to find an action that would do it. And sure enough, some smart person already came up with it. So, you know, I don't have false illusions. A lot of these programmatic charts can be overwhelming or not as helpful, but I'm curious. This looks pretty interesting here. Input variables, output variables, what happens in between, logical kind of separations here. Of resources into groups. More complicated example. And while this is more complicated, I still think that for a newcomer probably coming to a project, it's much quicker to grok looking at this and then looking at the code afterwards to get an idea.
Related to that, I didn't want to bring it up because it's not actionable, but did you see the system initiative announcement? They went out of preview. I mean, private preview, but
I saw something about it. I forget where it was, on Hacker News or somewhere, but it didn't resonate with me because I guess it didn't hook me immediately. I don't know anything about it. I didn't get what it was. System initiative?
It's the new DevOps infrastructure startup from the co-founder of Chef. They came out into private beta. Full disclosure, I had access to the preview, so I got to play around with it. It's super, super early, but they're doing some really fascinating things. Think kind of like Figma for DevOps, but a lot more powerful. I really love how they do a lot of things for you and how they made this really, really powerful. The example is, if you connect to resources, they autofill some what would be Terraform parameters for you, which is, think of it, if you have a container running in Kubernetes and you want to give that container rights to a folder in S3, well, you have the container, the Docker image, you need the service account, service account mapping, you need the IAM role, all those annotations, which are basically just copy pasting IDs between things. And yeah, I quoted on the page and in the press release. And this just does it for you. Well, or will do it, because right now, if you play the video, they just have a couple of resources, like it's super, super early. But eliminating that annoyance to me is super awesome. On the compliance side, when you connect stuff or do actions, you can do qualifications, which are kind of like Lambda on Terraform, which allow you to like fill in more details, do checks, do policy checks, and things like that. And there, again, it's a super early product, cannot really use it right now, but
I know this dude. Who is this?
Yeah. talking with them, and they've been like getting everything right. Like whenever I ask them about, how is this gonna work for like thousands of resources? And how are you gonna actually make money? How are you gonna work against this particular? Like they had answers for everything, and I am like super excited about this.
Cool, that's a good endorsement. So it's a open source core, at least.
That's the plan, but they still have some things to do before open sourcing it.
Okay, so it's not all up yet.
No, it's written in Rust, which is gonna get people excited, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. And you said by the creators of Chef, but it's a totally separate organization, company. They've long left Chef, I take it?
Oh, yeah. It's Adam. I'm terrible with names.
Okay.
Adam something something.
Gotcha. Cool. Anyone else have something to add to that? If you've been following it?
Adam Jacob.
Cool. All right. Next announcement. I think this is like the second or third one we brought up. Another command line CLI for kind of accessing LLMs to help you construct commands. So in this case, give me the command to list Git branches ordered by recency, and it spits out the command that you would need in order to do that. And another one here was a control tower one, basically tighter integration between control tower and security hub with the ability for it to detect drift if certain controls that you've set at the control tower level are disabled. You can now remediate those automatically, I guess. Still really wish there was just native Terraform support for control tower. Be pretty sweet. And
is there an open issue on that? Just while you mention it, I feel like,
well,
why is that not the case? Do they not have any APIs to control?
Yeah, exactly. There's very, very minimal APIs in Control Tower. Or
got it.
If any, I think there's like one or two APIs that it exposes, and it's been a slow progression.
Has anyone used Account Factory for? In Control Tower for Terraform? That's something that we've been looking at using.
Yeah, we've done a pilot with it, and I think it solves a different use case than we were looking for. So with that, it's about really establishing baselines inside of accounts. And even then, it's all just run totally blind through a code build job, I believe, that runs Terraform, no ability to inspect the plan before apply, and so forth. Plus lots of manual setup to get it off the ground. And I don't know. It's just a different approach. You get automatic accounts created, of course, through it, but that's all done not with Terraform. That's done through a Lambda apparatus.
And then you hit every quota on the way down the tree. So, you know, you hit all the limits about, like their account factory. Yes, mm-hmm. Now you have a API interface to create accounts, but there's a bunch of hidden limits around the SCPs, around the accounts and the number of OUs you can have. And it mm-hmm. when they first released it, at least, it was a painful experience, and I just walked away from it.
That's good to know.
Anyone have dissenting opinions or other opinions?
No, not really. I would just say also take a look at the GitHub page and look at the issues, the open issues and the closed issues, and see if any of those would be a deal breaker for you. But yeah, depending on how big your org is, it's also a little bit expensive. So there's that to think about as well.
What was the thing? Did you have a link to the issues you were talking about for Control Tower?
One second. Let me see if I can find it.
I got it here. Linked it in the chat.
This is the Terraform module to help you set it up. Yeah, good call. Check out those and if those are any deal breakers for you. All right. Last announcement. I was more or less skimming it. It was just an interesting, relatively recent post by someone who moved from Terraform to Pulumi. For all the presumed benefits and what some of the red flags were along the way, and that they ultimately pulled the plug on it and moved back to Terraform.
And it looks like he needs to be shown Atmos.
clearly. Yeah. All right. With that, anyone else have any announcements that caught their attention this week?
You missed one of your announcements, number 3.
Oh, I did. Oh, yeah. Dang. Thank you for calling that one out. That's annoying. I spoke to someone this week. They had just finished their migration of all their consolidating all their domains into Google domains end of last week or something. So now they're locked for 60 days and then this announcement comes out. And yeah, we've been using Google domains too. And I really have liked it. The simple, no frills registrar, not trying to upsell me with every domain I buy. And now if you are going to be upsold to Squarespace every time you buy a domain. So won't that be lovely? I just, yeah, it's impressive on the business side how disciplined Google is about shuttering things, not making enough money or being a distraction for them. But boy, does it suck when you're on the other side of that as a customer.
Does anyone here have any recommendations on what they're migrating off to?
Namespace or Namecheap.
Namecheap. I heard something about Spaceship, which is somewhat related to Namecheap, but I haven't figured out what Spaceship is versus a spaceship. Yeah. I think it's like the same company, but I haven't dug in too deep. I saw the Google Domains announcement looking through the Twitter threads. Website builder. Okay.
Yeah, so as soon as I see this, then I say, oh, no, don't, not interested. Every time I buy a domain, I don't want you telling me to build it with your builder. So I think that the least intrusive registrar, at least for a lot of people, probably in this session, is going to be the Amazon Route 53 registrar.
But keep in mind, that's not AWS. So that may surprise a lot of people when they use it, but
oh right,
you're not registered with AWS. You're registered with it's a French outfit, Gandhi.net. And they used to be like 3 different registrars they were using on the back end, but I get the feeling that it may have been consolidated to that one outfit. I don't know. Has anybody seen where your domains actually are? Are they still using other registrars or just Gandhi or however it's said?
You know, if you buy some international domains, they outsource it. I wasn't aware that there was a outsourcing for .com and other standardized domains.
Yeah, even .com, .io, you know, there's a lot of them that are that come up Gandhi. But I didn't know if they consolidated around it, because there were some announcements about you know, who won the business and stuff like that on the back end.
Yeah, and Gandhi's been in the news this past week as well for some other reason. I don't know why, but you cleared up a lot of things for me though just by saying that, Mike. I'm embarrassed to say. I've been a little bit confused by that too when I look at who is records for domains we bought there and why it said Gandhi or Dandy.
There have been some complaints about the French resolution process and French law not always being when you contest trademarks and namespace, that that process, legal term for negotiating stuff, the agreements, and when somebody has a protest over copyright, I'm missing the term right now.
A settlement,
DMCA.
Yeah, like settlement. Like negotiation, one of those terms. Maybe they're a little aggressive in pulling the trigger for the complainant, and they're following
arbitration
laws. Arbitration. Ah. Thank you.
Oh, arbitration. Yeah. Good. Okay.
I've never had a problem, but yeah, you want to know who is actually owns your domain or is the registrar, and it's not AWS in many cases.
And I assume you're locked out from accessing it directly through Gandhi?
You know, I don't know. We consolidated away from them. So, but that it wasn't a decision on the basis of who owns it. It was that AWS does not have support for all the TLDs that we have. So obviously AWS would be a great place because you want to consolidate your domains, you want to run the org, you have one billing process, you know, that's the dream. But there are quite a few TLDs that we have that just are not supported by AWS or Gandhi. So we can't consolidate all of them in one place. Namecheap we can, but Gandhi we can't. AWS we can't. Google couldn't do it. There's several domains that Google didn't support. So we didn't consolidate around Google. And so when this news broke on Google, we were saved that sadness.
I know over the years, a lot of our enterprise customers have just used something Mark Monitor, but I'm guessing that's not cheap. All right. Any other announcements? All right. Let's do it. Q&A. First one, Hans, you had a question about introducing Terraform changes in a more temporally spaced way, propagating very slowly through some initial stages. Meanwhile, other changes can be applied more rapidly in those environments. And to me, that sounds maybe more about how the Terraform is constructed. If I'm reading between the lines, and I could be reading wrong, it's sounds like a Terralith where you want to update sub-portions of an existing Terraform root module versus breaking the architecture down into lots of smaller root modules so that everything can be updated independently. Am I getting close, Hans?
We're not currently using Terraform, but we're looking into that. Nope. We currently use a mix of Ansible, Terraform, CDK, stuff like that. So we are focusing on it. Also looking at Atmos, using the modules, but even there I have that same question. Okay, say for example you use the VPC module and there are some changes in that. How are you going to make sure that some of the production environments still keep on the old version while the, some of the initial staging testing gets introduced to a new version?
Yeah, so there's a few ideas there. And I'll answer it as it relates to Atmos. Others can chime in on like what's done with Terebrant or other methods here. So the first thing is to think about deployment and release as separate things. And the terms are often overloaded within the industry. So in this case, here's like the component library. And we want to, like you say, keep the VPC behind maybe for a short time in production, but you know, keep it current in dev and try and keep probably staging not far behind. So the idea is that we want all environments to ultimately converge on the same version of the VPC, but maybe not all at the same time. So when we make a change to the VPC, and I'm saying like we make a we commit something into main, what we're saying is we want to deploy that change.
Yep.
When we release it, though, that is at a separate cadence. So we release it to dev, we release it to staging, we release it to production, and that's a deliberate action. Yep. So for that, there's a few different ways it can be implemented. For Atmos, we do it one way. For people using like Terragrunt or other Terraform tools, often what they do is they version pin the root module in every environment to what they want. Mm-hmm. But we don't do that. We don't do that for a specific reason. So what we do is when we plan the changes, we want to understand what the plan is of the affected changes of the VPC in every environment. So we know what the blast radius of the changes that we're doing across all environments, because maybe it will be a very disruptive change in production, but it might not be a disruptive change in dev. It might not be a disruptive stage, a change in staging.
Mm-hmm. Makes
sense. So how we do that is we have an approval gate before applying the changes, before releasing the changes to an environment. This way, you can maybe do continuous delivery to dev. So when you merge into main, auto-deploy it out to dev. But then queue up a release to staging, queue up a release to production behind an approval gate.
Yep.
And that's how we're thinking about it. Also, it's too soon to really announce, but we have some really exciting things coming very soon. We've actually already released it, but it's just not fully enough documented. So I don't want to promote it right now, but how to do all this with GitHub Actions. And right now, the recommended approach would be with Spacelift, which is another alternative.
Okay, and this also works with, for example, a mono repo where you have different teams working on it. So one approval flow is still pending while another thing is still going. Okay.
Yeah. So what I'm showing you here is actually a mono repo for our infrastructure. Oops.
Yep.
And that mono repo has some Terraform components, and those components are all here. So each one can be revved independently of another.
Then you have the stack separately from this one, or you have the components together?
We recommend vendoring them into the monorepo. So if I go into like the S3 bucket and we look at the component file is referencing an upstream. However, we vendor that into the repository. So it's easy to understand how it all comes together. And if you need to, you know, in a pinch, patch it, fork it, do whatever, you don't have to go through a huge process about getting it all upstream. You can just do it in your repository itself.
Yep. Okay. Makes sense.
Cool. All right. Any other questions we can get answered today?
I just had a sort of, I suppose it's a kind of follow-up to that. Yeah, also it's my first time coming to the meeting. I've seen it, watched a few online, but yeah, glad to be here. So I had a question about, so at the minute we have sort of staged releases in terms of there'll be an end product or set of, you know, components that we're building, and that's the, you know, the end goal. Yeah. But on the way there's a lot of dependencies. So one thing has to be created and it has to be up for so and so amount of time, and then, you know, several other things have to be provisioned in the meantime, and there's steps, so you can't just, you know, provision it all at the same time. So I suppose I wanted to ask about how, I suppose, best practices around that in general, and how it would work with Atmos, say.
Yeah, that's a trickier one to solve. If I understand it, you're doing kind of more complex releases to an environment that need to consist of multiple components updated in a particular order, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And so at the moment we have quite a hacky solution to that, which is just sequential cookie cutter, basically, you know, it'll overwrite. So say if you imagine if main.tf contains, like a Databricks deployment and then an EKS cluster and then also some EKS tooling, those can't all, you know, be provisioned at the same time. They have to happen in a particular order. And so the way we've tried to work around that is by you have a template and then you basically use Jinja templating to add those components, you know, marking each one with a flag, basically, if it makes sense.
Yeah. So this is a tooling problem or limitation on how you use Terraform. It is similar to the kinds of problems that like Spinnaker were designed to solve. So how do you do complicated orchestrated releases across multiple environments? So in terms of solving this as a silver bullet, I can't give you a silver bullet answer, but I can give you two alternatives that we've used in different situations. So as it relates to standard CI/CD workflows like GitHub Actions, working with Terraform with more complicated with this kind of a scenario where you have an order of operations for your components, what we did is, well, first of all, the GitHub Actions are first decomposed. So there's a very easy way to run and a plan. There's a very easy way to run and apply. And then for a given type of release strategy, we would create a workflow specific to that in GitHub Actions. So that workflow is watching for specific paths to change. And when those paths in your monorepo change, it always executes a standard workflow going through that sequence of events, first doing component A, which is a dependency of component B, which is a component dependency of component C, and so forth. And it always goes through that order of operations. It's not intelligent in that, you know, hey, if it didn't need to do B, it just skipped B and went straight to C. You still go through the formality of doing that with each one, except for there might be no changes. So that's a generic strategy that works with GitHub Actions. The more, you know, arguably the more elegant approach or the more like powerful approach is when you're using a platform like Spacelift, probably it can be done with similar ones like M0, Scalar, Terraform Cloud, et cetera. But we're more particularly experienced with Spacelift. So we have a construct of a dependency. So when we do that, you can say that component C depends on component B, component B depends on component A, such that when you modify component A, it automatically forces a plan of component B. In fact, you are not able to change component B until component A has successfully passed. And that's a concept of ordered dependencies supported by Spacelift natively. And if you're using our framework, if you're using Atmos, if you're using our Terraform modules and our strategy of doing things, you get that out of the box using Spacelift.
Great, thank you.
All right. Any other questions we can get answered today?
I suppose if no one else has one, I have
fire away.
A couple more. So I was just I'm new to Atmos, but I can't remember exactly how I came across it, and I really like the idea. I think I was at the time I was using TerraGrunt, and I ran into a lot of issues or just things that I found a bit aggravating about using it. And it seems like Atmos has a far more sane approach, especially when you start scaling. And so that's what we're doing at the moment. So I suppose my question is, if I'm pitching this to my team and the wider company as like a potential solution for us to move to, besides it being far more simple in terms of the YAML, defining this is my deployment and you can just see it in one YAML file, the entire thing. You don't have to keep replicating the same format each time. What are the main draws that would, because it requires some amount of relearning amongst it. What's the main cell, would you say?
So this is where giving a generic answer is sometimes not as effective, because the problems that led you here are the ones that we want to address. And that's why you should be using it. I can start with why we did it for ourselves and the results of that we've been seeing for our customers as a result of doing that. So before we had Atmos, we were trying for a very long time to avoid a lot of extraneous tooling and just use Terraform as natively as possible. So we used makefiles, we used lots of environment variables, we used lots of var files, if I didn't say that already. We briefly tried TerraGrunt. The reason we went against TerraGrunt was we didn't like the precedent of code generation, or just that basically the projects that you were using with TerraGrunt were basically vendor locked into then using TerraGrunt in perpetuity. So that's what we didn't like about it. It kind of hurts because it's almost taking a contrarian position within the ecosystem, because lots of people using Terraform in advanced ways use TerraGrunt. So we wanted a way to have a promise of always using vanilla Terraform, so we could always break glass and do it any other way. And we also realized that the fundamental problem we were having was how to manage large-scale configuration. And that's a problem that wasn't well solved, I think, by other tools out there. So we solved the problem with configuration using this concept of a stack. And a stack is obviously an overloaded term, but the stack is how you define a bunch of different Terraform root modules that we call components all together. So the other problem we saw in the ecosystem was because it's really hard to decompose your projects into smaller root modules or components, people didn't. So you have these large components. You'll have a component that provisions your VPC, it provisions your EKS cluster, it provisions your database, and then a few months later, your Elasticsearch cluster, and a few months later, your Kafka cluster, and all of those things. And it works. It's nice on the one side because everything Terraform figures out the graph and figures out the dependencies, but then it starts getting brittle. Your plans take 45 minutes to an hour to 2 hours to 3 hours. Your applies fail frequently and it doesn't work. So as we started solving one problem after the next, then we introduced new problems that we didn't know we had until we solved the other lower level problems. And that's why it's such a hard problem to explain, kind of why the tool is built the way it is. So jumping to the very end of the story, why you might want to adopt Atmos and what we have is you're buying into an ecosystem of how to, or like a framework of how to build infrastructure in a way that scales to a provable fashion, thousands and thousands of root modules deployed across, hundreds of accounts or environments. And that configuration is tersely defined in your configs, so it's manageable. We built the tool so with one command, you can break glass and you never have to touch it again. So maybe you're evaluating other options. There's TerraMate and TerraGrunt and TerraSpace and probably others coming out there. But all of them lock you in long-term into how they built it. But when you follow this model, all we're doing is writing TFVAR files. That's all we're doing under the hood, managing TFVAR files. It's that you end up needing to, you know, have ultimately different types of archetypes, so different types of S3 buckets and different types of EKS clusters and different types of databases. And you can't define that in pure Terraform without it being very non-dry. But when you use just this Atmos stacks, you're able to define archetypes. So here's what an archetype is of an S3 bucket for access logs, an archetype for an S3 bucket of these other things. So I'm being very hand wavy, and I could have just shown you kind of what I was talking about. But in like the catalog here, we go to an S3 bucket. So here's the baseline configuration that we want for every single Terraform bucket that we create. So as an organization, you can define that. And now this is a file inside of GitHub. And I don't know if you're using GitHub or not, but what's great about using GitHub is now you have code owners. So now you can have owners for different archetypes or for different areas of your infrastructure. So you can have code owners for managing S3 buckets. You can have code owners for EKS, or basically your subject matter experts. And then those subject matter experts create the patterns that you need for the other things you want developers to do. So there's a lot of upfront configuration that you do to establish well-defined patterns, but that's what you need in large-scale infrastructures. What I believe is that you need to set some standards, because that's what makes it maintainable. So you have access to all the underlying variables that you need to set, but ultimately most people don't need to know that. And then when you define an archetype for logs, for CloudFront logs, you just need to know that you need to set the ACL for log delivery right, inherit all the defaults. And now anytime I import an S3 bucket for CloudFront logs, it's always configured the right way for my organization. And if the organization changes its policy on what the defaults are for a bucket, you can do that centrally. And then through drift detection, every single thing that leverages it can be updated. So I think this level of thought leadership is what's lacking from the entire Terraform ecosystem of tooling out there, is how to do the large scale infrastructures and how to think about the data model of your configuration for infrastructure.
But yeah, I think that's exactly the problem we're starting to run into, is it was working fine and now we're having to scale it, and it quickly becomes quite messy. I have a very unrelated question, and then I'll shut up. So I saw that earlier you there was that sort of GPT CLI tool, and I was curious if anyone, well, firstly, had used it, what their experience was of it, and if they have, how it compares to Shell GPT, I think it's called, which is a lot more popular from what I can see.
Shell, yeah, I don't know, actually. That might be a fourth or fifth one we haven't announced yet. Shell GPT? Is this the one you were thinking of?
Yeah, that's the one.
Interesting. Oh, yeah, 5,000 stars. Haven't seen this one yet. Have you been using this one?
I was a little bit. I have so many variations now. I have it in my menu bar. I have it just a regular. I have a particular, you know, app for it. Using it quite a bit. Context,
you got another way to do it.
Yeah.
Cool. So I know I was long-winded on that. We also have a few customers on the call. I don't know if anyone else has any opinions, active users of Atmos, on kind of like what the sell is for you on using it. Feel free to chime in.
Feel it was well stated.
All right, thank you. Cool. All right, more questions, anyone?
Sure. I asked one in the Slack channel. Just wondering if anyone has an experience with a Galera cluster. I think I've seen it be promoted by MariaDB, and it looks fabulous. Multi-master, multi-writer, something that AWS Aurora at one point seemed to be working towards, and then they deprecated. Just wondering if it really works and whether it has folks have positive or negative experience with it.
Wait, Jonathan, they deprecated the multi-master MySQL stuff in Aurora?
Yes, they did. The only available in version one or two, and then version three doesn't have it. That was my reading of the docs, is that the multi-writers is no longer supported.
Huh, I missed that. Vlad, do you know anything about that?
Not up to date, sorry.
All right, no worries.
I mean, it makes the Aurora architecture much more traditional. It makes it, you know, much less auto-magical. And so as a result, you know, you have to decide to vector certain queries to certain instances, not just, you know, to for optimization. You have to do it, and you have to make sure that queries vectored have either all the writes in one or none of the writes. You know, it makes it a you're responsible for it kind of architecture from a development perspective.
Just wanted to put one thing on the table. Make sure you are aware of, though, also the RDS proxy offering where it lets you do some of that vectoring.
Yes, I was looking at that as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and like what Jeremy White says, definitely used Galera back in the day when you still had to self-host databases, but haven't looked back since RDS. But I understand for large-scale use cases that you have. Honestly, it just makes me miss, or it's just, I wish Amazon would come out with something that did that more natively. I have a little bit of FOMO over, was it neon.tech? And I wish Amazon just bought them before somebody else does.
Right. Well, I thought that going back years that Aurora was the magical serverless whatever, but it
never
really seemed to come to pass. There are 14 varieties of Aurora, and only one limited version of them has any magic built into it.
Yeah. Yeah. It turns out that building databases is really hard.
Yeah. We really like the experience that we get with MongoDB Atlas. It's MongoDB, so it doesn't carry over into our relational database, but they really seem to have kind of cracked the code on how to run a nice database service. And we just, RDS and Aurora is still very much a plow your own field kind of experience.
Have you ever used or managed Elasticsearch?
No, we do use it. I'm not particularly familiar with it.
Again, this is old knowledge of Galera, but back in the day, just the similar notion of sizing your cluster right and stress testing it. I feel like I have to say it again. But if you already got stress tests, if you already know what breaks your database, is actually really the best stress test, is to have the history of what makes things fall over, then go read it ready, and at least assuming they haven't done anything too crazy in the last 5 years, then I would imagine it'd be worth trying something. It's an interesting tool set.
I just feel like there's so many other things than just the database. There's the backup process, the restore process, the monitoring process. Ultimately,
drills
for all replicas. Unless you have a team who owns it, I wouldn't want to.
Oh yeah, that's another thing to say. You definitely would need an engineer for it. Expect more than one engineer, because it's going to have support.
Yeah.
I was curious if anyone's used geodesic with running it on DevPod or Dev. I don't know. Is it DevPods or DevPod? It's essentially like the self-hosted version of Gitpod.
Oh yeah. No, yeah, we haven't tried
destroyed their business.
we wanted to. I want to offer that as a really easy, quick start for geodesic to get up and running. I forget if we. I know we did a pilot with it at one point, but I don't know if what the current maintained state of that is. If there's there's no Gitpod file here, but that or like also doing supporting like Copilot. Are you using DevPod?
No, but I just listened to a podcast on it today, so it's quite it just sounds like a great idea because I was quite keen on Gitpod, but I didn't really want to pay. It wasn't kind of worth it to me. You know, I've got a good a docker and a good enough laptop. So, but yeah, if you can just self-host it, on anything, it definitely has a lot of appeal, especially if you're working with a lot of people and you can give them a general base template and then they can sort of iterate on it by themselves, but you also have an underlying thing which is shared of these are the tools that everyone who's working here in this capacity needs. I'm gonna try out.
Andy Wortman says Aurora Multimaster was actually only in Aurora 1 and didn't make it to Aurora 2 even. So all right, good question. Any other questions we can answer today? Anything goes, any questions? CI/CD, release engineering, Kubernetes, Terraform, AWS.
Well, I'll stick another one out there, just database related. SkySQL, essentially MariaDB as a service.
Have they cracked the multi-master?
I haven't really spent any time with them to know. I'm just kind of not 100% enthused with what we're seeing out of RDS, and I'm looking around to see if there's any other magic out there to consume.
And specifically something that's MySQL.